How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your regular routine. We are the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Jay King, here to talk about a bunch of things. The Morris twins are on trial. Jaylen Brown is out there dropping some knowledge on the flat earth conspiracy. And Kyrie Irving went on First Take and shook up the world. Holy shit. What a freaking interview that was. All of it's brought to you by SeatGeek. Our friends at SeatGeek can help you find the best seats at the best prices for any kind of show, sports, music, comedy, all of that. And we'll get you $20 off a little later on. So, Jay, let's just dive into this Kyrie Irving shit. First of all, I'm pissed off at him for making me watch First Take. That's the beginning.
That's like the only time I've ever watched First Take in my life.
Never watch First Take. I don't want to watch First Take, and I had to, and I'm very upset about that. Not only did I have to watch First Take, today I had to watch the clip of the First Take guys reacting to their interview with Kyrie Irving. So let's start at the beginning. Kyrie Irving went on to First Take, Max Kellerman screaming A. Smith, asking him a bunch of questions that he deflected, dodged, answered, I don't know, kind of smugly, philosophically. What was your whole feeling about the whole interview?
It was a strange interview. Like, there was a combative feel, especially at the start. I thought there was a combative feel because it was very clear that Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith thought that Kyrie Irving was dodging their questions. And I thought he kind of was. Like, he wasn't directly answering some of their questions. And maybe it's because he's got personal stuff going on in Cleveland, doesn't want to air out all the grievances. Whatever the case, he wasn't directly answering the questions. And it just turned into a combative feel. Then he told Max Kellerman one of his questions didn't make sense. And they kind of went at each other a little bit. It was entertaining. And it was kind of painful at times. It was uncomfortable at times. I don't know how much we actually learned from Kyrie about himself. I thought the most telling things that he said, or the most enlightening things that he said to me, were the things he said about wanting to be a complete point guard. And for the Celtics, like, that's exactly what you want to hear. That's exactly the type of attitude you want Kyrie Irving to come into Boston with. And he was saying he's really excited to finally play his position, point guard, and how he doesn't want to be an isolation player anymore. And it's weird because he's always been an isolation player, and he's been great in that role. And the people who have, like, his detractors say, you know, he's great at that, and they admit he's great at that, but can he do all the other things? And he's sitting there saying, I don't want to be this guy either. Like this player you guys all hate, or the style of play you guys all, you know, doubt me because of, I don't want to be that guy either. So, I don't know. I felt like he's kind of putting all the pressure on himself because he's admitting what I was before isn't who I want to be. I want to be a complete point guard. I want to be someone who can lift my teammates. I want to be everything you guys want me to be. So now the pressure's on him. If it doesn't work in Boston, where Isaiah Thomas just finished off this incredible season and the Celtics have all this ball movement and player movement, then it's on you, Kyrie. But if it does work in Boston, then it's obvious that it was the situation, whether it was playing alongside LeBron, playing in that system, whatever the case may be, that was holding him down. Whereas now it's his opportunity. He's got a chance, and he's saying all the right things from a Boston perspective, but it's very different to say that what you want to be and then go out and be it. So now he has to be that complete point guard he's saying he wants to be.
Yeah, I think the big takeaway for me, in you know, strip away all the other bullshit of you know, the types of questions and answers and all that stuff, the biggest takeaway for me was he had not great words to say about the organization and the coaching. He didn't say anything bad about LeBron. And it's pretty obvious that he has problems with how he was used. He didn't think that he was being used to his full potential. And maybe that was part of playing with LeBron. And when we say maybe he didn't want to play with LeBron, I don't think it's, you know, that guy sucks as a teammate, I don't want to play next to him. I think it was, just trying to put two and two together here, I think it was him looking at his role, and he was kind of a cog in the LeBron James machine, that the coaches and the organization wanted him to do certain things because that's what was needed of him to fit into the LeBron-led Cavaliers. And ultimately, I don't think he wants to just be that kind of square peg in the square hole, that he's bigger than that. And he wants to go to a place, he mentioned about coaching, that he wants to go play for a coach that can get him to do more. He mentioned the organization. He wants to play with an organization that's going to push him. He wants to be pushed. He knows he can be better. He knows he can do more things. And so he went looking for that. So look, that's his choice. He's 25 years old. He's just entering his prime, and he wants to get the most out of him. When he talks about perfecting his craft, that's how I read it. When he talks about all of this stuff, it means I'm not going to sit here and just be this sideshow to the LeBron thing. I want to go out and be the best possible player I can be. So looking at the Boston situation, where else is he going to get exactly what he's looking for than Boston, with Brad Stevens and the teammates over there that kind of fit what he wants to do, you know, especially Al Horford and running plays with Al Horford. I think there's a reason why he was very anxious and excited to play for Boston, because all of the things that he said on First Take matched all of the things that Boston has to offer.
And that's why it's so on him now. That's why all the pressure's on him now, because looking back at Cleveland, you can say all those things. You can say they had no stability in their franchise. You can say playing alongside LeBron is tough. Look at, you know, Dwayne Wade, how many troubles they had. And other players, Kevin Love, Chris Bosh, how many sacrifices they had to make to play alongside LeBron James. You can say, you know, he had, I don't know how many different coaches, three or four different coaches during his 6 years there. He never played in a system that was designed for him. So even when you take the numbers with LeBron out, and Cleveland was 0-8 last year, and their offense crumbled when Kyrie was on the court and LeBron wasn't, well, their offense was designed for LeBron James, so of course it's not going to be nearly the same when he's not on the court. Now, the Celtics offense is going to be designed for Kyrie Irving. It's going to be designed for how he fits with Gordon Hayward and Al Horford, and he's going to be in a situation where he's set up to be a complete point guard. And if he's not a complete point guard, now it's because he's a flawed player. It's going to have nothing to do with the organization. It's going to have nothing to do with his teammates, his coaches, anything. It's on him. And I think he wants that. And from his perspective, I understand why he's maybe he is frustrated, but I'm not sure he's frustrated. But he has to look around the NBA. And I don't think Kyrie Irving is the best point guard in the NBA, but I guarantee he thinks he is. After what he's done against the Golden State Warriors the last two finals, after all the big shots he's hit, all the great games he's had in huge games, after, you know, the 40-some-odd points he hung on Avery Bradley in the playoffs last year, all the things he's done, And he didn't even make an All-NBA team last year. Like, this is a 25-year-old guy who people should be super excited about because he's so skilled and he's accomplished so much and he's been on so many All-Star teams. And yet, there are so many doubts. And I have doubts about how he's going to fit in Boston. I have doubts about what type of player he is and whether he's actually that complete point guard. But from his perspective, this is finally the chance to show everybody that he's not the guy who you know, was that isolation player in Cleveland. That he's more than that, that he can handle more responsibilities, and that he's going to flourish in a new system. And that the isolation and all the flaws in his game weren't his fault, and it wasn't on him. And he can do more, and he wants to do more. So it was a fascinating interview, man. It really was. It was fascinating. I thought Stephen A. Smith and Kellerman handled it pretty well. Like, they went at him and he went back at them, and it was great TV.
It was kind of interesting to see the disdain on Kyrie's face for some of this. It was really interesting. I don't think Stephen A. and Kellerman were particularly great. I wish they would just get their damn questions out and let him answer and then follow up. So often these guys on these shows, especially, it's all a big, you know, a big like grandstanding thing. They have to take a minute and a half to get your damn question. Just ask the question, have a question, listen to what he says and follow up on it.
They're not journalists, man. They're personalities. They got to be out there being who they are.
They could have gotten so much more out of Kyrie.
I don't know if they could have. I thought they asked good questions, and I thought the way that they asked them kind of made him, from a television standpoint, it made him ornery. It made him upset, and that was fascinating to watch. So I thought it was all riveting stuff, whether it was good, bad, otherwise. It really was a fascinating interview.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it was definitely interesting to watch for sure. Kyrie and the issue of him, you know, talking to LeBron on his way out, very comparable in some ways to, you know, Ray Allen talking to people on his way out. And, you know, you brought up the point on Twitter. I brought up the point. If someone is trying to look for a new job or somebody wants a new job for whatever reason, you can criticize the reason, but the fact is he wants a new job. He wanted a new job and he asked for a new job in within the system. It's not up to him to talk to LeBron about it. That's not up to him. He did what he did and he moved on. So that whole thing where he was like, did you talk to LeBron? No. Why should I? You know, like that whole exchange was very telling. I don't think he and LeBron are friends. Like they're not buddies or anything like that. But it's not up to anybody to clear anything with a teammate. Like that's not an obligation that you have. If you decide that you want to leave and the team is accommodating you, or if you do it as a free agent, it's not necessarily up to you to clear it with your teammates. Just because your other teammate is really, really good, that's just not your obligation. You don't have to do that.
I tweeted about this a little bit, and it's just fascinating how we treat sports differently from other jobs. Like, if I said this on Twitter, if I were to leave Mass Live, and I do not want to, I'm super happy at Mass Live. I love Mass Live. But if I were to leave, like, I would make that decision myself. I would tell my boss and I'd go. And maybe I'd call like my one or two closest coworkers. But it wouldn't be this thing where I'm like telling everyone in the office about it. I don't think anyone would care in the office about it, you know? But when it's sports, because we see teammates as brothers or like family members, we think it's more intimate. And maybe it should be, maybe it is, maybe it's not. But we hold athletes to a different standard than we hold any other workers to. And it's weird to me, and I get it to a certain extent. These guys are with each other all the time, and in our ideals, like, they love each other, and they want to fight for each other, and they want to win for each other. But sometimes that's not how it is. And sometimes your teammate is your coworker. And sometimes, like, it's not your best friend or your brother or anything like that. And I think that Cleveland locker room, it seemed like a weird locker room, man. Like, just a weird locker room with cliques and guys who didn't necessarily fit in all the time and guys who sometimes fit in. And they were always up and down. They had subtweets going on. And I don't know. It was a weird situation. And that's another aspect. Like, maybe this Boston team will be different because all the players are different. But top down, the culture is very good in the organization. That's
– Well, for
– Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I was going to say, first of all, if you ever demanded a trade out of Mass Live, I would get Westerholm on this podcast immediately. Just grill him. Just grill him about your relationship.
And then he'd start yelling at you like you're Kellerman.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I would wear like makeup on half of my face like Kellerman did. That's a different issue. But, you know, if it's interesting. If everybody just took a minute to look at the NBA as coworkers, like if people looked instead of teammates, if they looked at people like coworkers, and that Brad Stevens, instead of the coach, was, you know, a middle manager, and Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge was like the general manager, like, well, he's the general manager, but like, bad little point. But like, instead of like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just the hierarchy at whatever work situation you're in. If you just think about it that way, just for a minute, separate it and just look at it as a workplace. Don't look at it as the team that you love. And this is why people treat it differently. This is the team that people love. Everybody listening to the show loves the Boston Celtics. We talk about it in terms of we. When the Celtics win, it's we win. And I know some people don't like that, but there is a sense we all root for the laundry, as Seinfeld said. We all root for the white and green that says Boston or Celtics on the front. That's what we do. That's our, like, so anything that goes against that, we don't like. Whether the coach sucks or the players suck or a GM makes a bad trade, anything that hurts that laundry, we hate and we rebel against. So whenever there's a guy that wants to leave or whenever there is something adversarial going on, we, the fandom, rebel against that bad thing that's happening. But if you look at it like a workplace, which it is for these people, and it's a very unique workplace in that their career ends somewhere around 40 years old. Somewhere around 40, that's like the end, absolute, like very rarely does anybody work beyond that age. Most guys, their careers are over before that. So they don't have this luxury of moving around and everything. You don't work till you're 65. At 30 something years old, you're generally looking for another job, or hopefully you've made enough money where you can just chill out on some island somewhere. But it's very weird that way. And these guys make a ton of money, but that money's going to last them till they're 70, 80 years old. So they have to make these weird decisions. They have to make these things that they have to make these decisions that people in a normal workplace don't have to make. So it's just a wild kind of scenario. Bottom line is, if you are a fan, just take a second, step back, and look at these guys as employees at a workplace and not the players on your favorite team. And think of the decisions they have to make from that perspective. And I think it can reshape how you see what they do.
There you go. Yeah.
There you go.
And also, don't ask Kyrie Irving about his relationship with LeBron James, because he doesn't like that shit, man.
Don't do that. One other weird thing about these guys in their workplace is that when I go to work, I don't have 17,000 people paying money to come see me do my job, which I'd be kind of cool with. That'd be fine. But I don't have people opening up the SeatGeek app and saying, huh, let me buy tickets to John's job so I can see him do his job. Like, if I was podcasting, what if we were podcasting in front of an arena and every time we did a podcast, 17,000 people showed up to like cheer or boo or whatever our podcast.
I would step the hell up, man. I would just rise to the occasion.
Look, I don't.
I'm a bright lights type of guy.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mind that at all. Put me on the leprechaun at center court, put a microphone on me, and let's go. Podcast would be just ridiculous.
I'd probably start crying. My hands would be so sweaty. There'd be puddles on the floor.
No, it would be so much fun. I wish SeatGeek had tickets to our podcast, but you don't. They have tickets to basically everything else, though. So if you could do that, you open your SeatGeek app, you can get tickets to just about everything else. Your favorite team, musician, whatever, open it up. It's the easiest way to get tickets. Shop for your tickets. It can be anywhere, no matter where you are in the country. Couple of taps, you can instantly find the seats. I've used the SeatGeek app to buy tickets on a number of occasions. I know Jay has. And I know that it's designed to make everything streamlined and it just make the experience easier than ever. Saves you time and money because it aggregates all of the other ticket sites. It goes out there, searches for everything, does all of the work that you would normally be doing, and it puts it into one site so you can compare and find the amazing deal. It grades all the tickets so you can find the most, get the most bang for your buck and find the seats that fit your budget. You can set price alerts so you can go and say, I want to spend $100 in this ticket. When that ticket's $100, let me know, and then it'll let you know, and you can go buy the ticket. So make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, sports, comedy, theater, concerts, like as if our boy Millie's was in concert selling out the Boston Garden, which he will be soon. I want to give a shout-out to Millie's right now because Millie's just dropped his new album, Sped 2, and came out today. I listened to it. I'm on my second go through. Jay, you've listened to it quickly.
It's got some bangers. It's good, man. I'm a fan. Yeah, give Millie's, me more Millie's. I mean, think about it. It's our podcast intro rapper just on an album, full album. Our right. podcast intro is the greatest minute of rapping that ever happened. And I don't say that just because he mentioned both of us and we're kind of superstars because of that. But which one of you listeners was on a rap? Huh? Huh?
Right. How many people has Millie's name dropped out there listening?
Yeah.
Right here, me and you.
It is pretty cool that the guy who does our intro has a song. Two songs now, I think, with Jadakiss.
Yes, two. Yeah. On this album, he's got his second song with Jadakiss. Like I said, I've been listening to it. You should pick it up. Sped 2. Go to wherever you get music and check out Sped 2, please. Like, I know Millie's biggest hit is our podcast intro, but he's made some other really good songs too. And whenever he does go on tour, which I'm sure he will be, you just get that SeatGeek app. And when you do buy tickets to Millie's tour, you download the app, enter the promo code LONBA. LONBA. Our listeners get $20 back off their first SeatGeek purchase. So if your first SeatGeek purchase is to a Celtics game, to a Millie's show, or anything else, LONBA is the promo code for $20 back off your SeatGeek purchase. So Jaylen Brown was out and about today, speaking of philosophical guys, and he gave a little nod to our boy Kyrie with the whole flat earth
thing. That was
funny,
man. That
was really funny. Jay, you were there. It was and the funny thing is, it's like a stay in school event, which just makes the joke even funnier. But,
got done giving a speech about education and how important learning is. And then he's like, oh yeah, that flat earth thing. Like,
oh yeah, there's something
Kyrie
to it.
Might have
yeah.
a point, but I'm pretty sure he was just kidding around.
He could barely keep a straight face throughout that whole thing.
Yeah. And then his tweets. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so how was it today?
He gave a pretty cool speech about how he got into learning and how he kind of attacked his 1 year at Cal, which is, it's not regular for a guy who knew pretty much that he was going to go to the NBA in 1 year to take such an interest like he did in actually getting an education at Cal. So he talked a little bit about how he approached his education to a lot of the kids, and it was pretty cool. And actually, Celtics assistant coach Jerome Allen gave an incredible speech about perseverance and kind of how like his parents hadn't gone to college. Some days, like his mom couldn't even afford to get him on the bus to go to school, and how he kind of persevered through everything and made it to the NBA and graduated and this and that, ended up, you know, the coach at Penn and now Celtics assistant. So that was really cool too. It was a cool event. They partnered with the Stay in School program. We'll give the Celtics a little shout out for their community event here. But then Jalen talked to the media for like 5 minutes and made some flat earth jokes and talked a little bit about the team.
One of the interesting things that he said was mirrored the message from one Teeter Rozier, shout out to Jan Packard, that the beginning of the season might be a little difficult, which another guy talking about the first part of the season makes a little bit of sense, that things might be a little slow out of the gate. So for whatever reason, that's kind of a message that I think guys are getting. And look, I don't know, there's a line there between understanding that it'll be tough at the beginning and like almost kind of making pre-excuses that I think some people might, I don't think it's a pre-excuse, but
yeah,
could be a little kind of off-putting to some people, like, all right, we know that it might be a little bit slow, but I hope you guys are still planning to win these games.
Yeah. Here are my two thoughts. Like, rational take, yes, they probably will take time to gel. They probably won't come out of the gates. Like, they have a 4-game preseason. They have 10 new faces. They have 2 new All-Stars. They have an entirely different team. Like, all the guys that made up their identity are gone. It's going to be just an entirely different team from top to bottom, everything. The attitude, the style, everything. So, rational take, yes. Yes, it is going to take time to gel. It should take time to gel because of all those obstacles. The hot take in me says says Brad Stevens is going to need to address this and to get the players to realize, like, we're not here to gel later in the season. We're not here to start playing great basketball, you know, in February or March or April. Like, yeah, like you'd rather be playing your best basketball in the playoffs and peaking then, but we're here to play great basketball as quickly as we can. And so I think he kind of needs to make sure that guys don't feel that way. And even though it's natural for this team to take time, and they probably will take time, like, they need to approach it with a sense of urgency that they can't just accept the fact that it's going to take time to gel, that they need to go after it quickly. And I do believe, I haven't talked to anyone in the organization about why they decided to have their training camp in Newport, Rhode Island again after 3 years in Waltham, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's because Brad Stevens thought, we need to get away, we need to kind of form this team, we need to have these guys like going out to dinner together and hanging out together and doing all these things that they wouldn't be doing if they were in Waltham with their families in their own apartments, things like that. Like, get them in a hotel, get them out to team dinners, really have a training camp that kind of forces the process onto these guys, because it will be a process, but they can't approach it like it's never going to happen, or like they have a lot of time for it to happen. Fact of the matter is, they don't. Like, regular season it's less than a month away now. It's October 17th is the regular season opener, and they're going to get their asses kicked by LeBron James if they take the mentality that they're just going to take however long they need to gel.
Right.
So that, that was my hot take.
That reminds me of a story. I may have told it here on the podcast before, but when I was in college, my junior year at Emerson, we were feeling good. Our team was pretty good, and historically, the team was really, really bad. So I was feeling myself. Junior year, I was named captain my junior year, and I felt like this surge of, I'm going to be the leader. So I looked at the schedule, and I put on a whiteboard in front of the locker room, this season's goal, like 22-2, which I don't think we'd won 15 games in a season historically up until that point. So I thought 22 wins was going to be amazing. I was feeling real good about myself. There was a real goal, and I felt good about my leadership skills. Coach comes in, looks at it, and he says, "Who put this up here?" I said, "I did. I was proud of myself." And he looks square in my face and he goes, "What two games do you think we're going to lose? Because I won't play you in those two games." And it just knocked me off my feet and immediately ingrained this lesson in me. When it comes to this stuff, no one expects to go undefeated. No one obviously is going 82-0, except maybe the Warriors, but no one expects to go 82-0, but you go into every game expecting to win and finding a way to win and preparing yourself to win. So the goal was not 22-2. The goal was 24-0, knowing that we could go 22-2, that we could go 20-4, whatever it was. But the goal at the beginning is to go in and win every game. So it teaches you a little more micro focus that we're not looking at the big picture. If you go in, and this is something that Brad Stevens has said, you go into every game looking at that particular game. How do we win this game? What do we need to do to win this game? What little things do we need to do when we're facing the Cleveland Cavaliers? Forget about game 2, 3, 5, 10, whatever. What do we need to do to win this game? If you go into every game with that focus and not worry about, oh, this is 4 games in 5 nights. Well, which doesn't exist anymore, but you know what I mean. This is a back-to-back. If you go into each game with the focus of what do I need to do to win this game, you're going to end up winning some of those games that might be the quote-unquote schedule loss. Or you have such a focus on the little things that you start building yourself good habits. So the lesson that I'm thinking that Brad has to impart on some of these guys is the same lesson that the coach imparted on me on that day, which is one of the best lessons I've ever learned. You just go in expecting to win, finding a way to win. What do I need to do to win this game? The rest will take care of itself. Okay. One of the things that might not happen is the projected starting lineup on this team might not be ready for opening day. The Morris twins are currently on trial. And very few people are talking about this, but training camp starts next week. It's Monday. This is we're doing a show that's going to be released on Wednesday. So we're only a few days away from everyone convening on Newport, Rhode Island to start training camp. And the Morris twins won't be at their respective training camps. Marcus Morris, a guy that I think will be the starting forward on opening day, isn't going to be there. So how much does that set the team back, Jay?
I mean, assuming he's actually not there, who knows? It's hard to say how long the trial is going to last, how much time he's going to miss. Who knows what's going to happen this trial? So I don't want to speculate too much on that. But obviously, like, there are a lot of moving pieces to the team. There are a lot of minutes up for grabs. There are a lot of players that need to learn how to fit in with a lot of new faces, and it's less than ideal to have one of your players in a trial right before the season begins. I'll just put it like that.
Less than ideal. Great.
It's slightly less than ideal to have Marcus Morris in a trial, an assault trial, while everybody else is getting together in Waltham, getting ready for the season. Kyrie Irving's back in Boston, by the way. He's back in Boston. Got there today.
Well, good for him. Time to get to work, Kyrie. We need to see him out there because, quite honestly, I'm still not used to the fact that he's a Celtic. Like, that's just such a weird thing to me. The fact that he and Gordon Hayward are Celtics. Gordon Hayward, I think I can accept a little bit more because it's been so speculated for a long time. The Kyrie thing just kind of happened so quickly, and I'm still so, you know, it's in my head that he's still a Cavalier. But it's good to have him in Boston. It's good to have most of these guys in Boston. Training camp starts on Monday. These guys are going to be down in Newport, Rhode Island, my home state, getting ready for what's going to be a really interesting season. So we'll be here to talk about it. We're going to be going back to our daily podcast pretty soon as the season starts winding back up again. So I know some people have been wondering about the whole daily thing. We're like, off season has been nice. We're most shows take breaks in the off season. We have not. We've been here very often for you. So we appreciate you guys listening. You should be subscribing to the podcast wherever you find your podcasts, even where you might not normally look for your podcast, like Spotify. I want to give shouts to people who have been contacting me saying, hey, we found you on Spotify. Yes, we're there. So go to their podcast page and search for Locked On Celtics. We are there along with a few of the other Locked On shows. They curate their podcasts. It's not like iTunes where everybody's there. They curate their podcasts. And so we're one of the shows that they've chosen to be on Spotify.
We are the chosen ones, bitches.
We are. We are. Absolutely. We're everywhere, man. You can go onto your smart home, smart device and say, hey, Alexa, play the next Locked On Celtics show. And it will do it. That's amazing to me. So do that. Make sure you tell your friends, give us a rating, give us 5 stars. Let everybody know that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast. And again, go support a local rapper, our boy Millie's, who did our opening theme. He's got his new album out, Sped 2. Listen to it today. It's really good. So go check that out. And thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On podcast.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics, Millie's.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.